Coming up this time, a meeting with Brian Clough in his office.
Me and my dad come up. My dad was very nervous because my dad played for Reading in the 60s and he was a centre forward. Him and the gaffer were just best buddies for like 20 minutes, just talking about the good old days and football and everything. And I was just sitting there, okay, whatever. And he said, have you come to a decision yet? I said, well, I've come to some figures.
Transfer talks and a blank contract.
He said, sign that and I'll fill it in and come back tomorrow morning and it'll all be done. Seriously, you want me to sign a blank contract? And once I sign that, I'm yours, regardless of what's on it. He said, well, do you trust me?
Match day preparations, Cloughy style.
He didn't coach, he didn't do set pieces. He gave you the responsibility as an individual and as a collective team. So if we got a corner, whoever fancied it, basically, could go and take it.
Plus, a phone call from Fergie.
I was walking the dogs down the Trent by the training ground and I had a phone call on my brick of a mobile phone back in the day. And it was Alex Ferguson. I said, well, I'm out of contract so I can talk to anybody.
Hello, this is Franz Carr. You're listening to the Green Jumper podcast with Marcus Alton, highly commended in the Independent Podcast Awards.
What I want to say very briefly, because I've been told to keep it down to 2 minutes. Now, the guy who told me that must be a bloody idiot for a start.
But he was fantastic to me. Should I have left? Would it have been different? Probably, but who knows?
All that and much more coming up in this episode.
It's the Green Jumper Pod with myself, Marcus Alton, and for this episode, I'm in the lounge of a Nottingham hotel to meet a former England international who Brian Clough described as a talented young man and one of his most effective signings. I'm really pleased to say hello to Neil Webb.
How do you do, Marcus? Okay?
Yeah, it's good to see you. You're looking well all these years after playing for Cloughy. You signed for him back in the summer of 85. Can you remember your first meeting with him when you agreed to sign?
Yeah, I can. It was a weird situation because I was at the end of my contract at Portsmouth and I was waiting by the phone to see if anyone, as you did, the house phone in them days, because you couldn't leave the house just in case you missed a phone call. And I had a phone call from Aston Villa, from Graham Turner, and I also had a phone call from Alan Hill from Nottingham Forest. Not Brian Clough, he didn't ring me. Alan Hill rang me. So I thought, well, that's Andy. They're both in the same neck of the woods. So I go up to see Villa on the, I think it was a Monday, and then I'll drive up to Nottingham Monday night and see Nottingham Forest on the Tuesday, then make a decision on the Wednesday. So me and my dad come up, went to see Villa, went to see Mr. Ellis.
Doug Ellis, the chairman.
Ellis, the chairman, yeah. Didn't meet the manager.
Right.
Only met Mr. Ellis, sat down for lunch. Right, you're getting this amount a week, and that's all. It's no negotiations whatsoever. And I just went, oh, impressive stadium. Don't get me wrong, Aston Villa was a impressive stadium at the time. It still is. And I thought, okay. Didn't really like his abrupt attitude, being a 22-year-old naive southerner sort of thing. And I thought, okay. And I looked at my dad, and my dad was like, okay. So we went to the hotel. I said, well, see what Forrest has got to say, but I don't like... Just didn't like his attitude,
yeah.
And there was something about it I didn't like. So we drove. So on Tuesday we come to the City Ground, met Mr. Clough with my dad, sat there, and had the briefest discussion ever on a contract, ever. I mean, I walked in. He said, "What do you want? What are you looking for?" And I said, "Well, I don't really know, to be honest." I said, "But I'll give you some figures."
Yeah.
And my dad was very nervous. Because my dad played for Reading in the 60s and he was a centre forward with a goal every other game or every three games or whatever. So him and the gaffer were just best buddies for like 20 minutes, just talking about the good old days and football and everything. So I was just sitting there, whatever. And he said, have you come to a decision yet? I said, well, I've come to some figures. So I asked for 650, 750, 850 a week. Just off the top of my head, I hadn't a clue.
Yeah.
I didn't have agent. I didn't know what was going on. I asked for moving expenses, obviously, because I did have a house in Portsmouth, so I was obviously going to buy one in Nottingham. Moving expenses, furniture expenses. I was asking for, and some cash, like, you know, as a signing on fee, because I was under contract. So I thought, well, whatever.
Yeah.
And he just looked at me and he knocked 50 quid a week off what I asked for, and he gave me everything else. And he said, I'll agree to everything else. I said, OK. I said, well, that's fine. I looked at my dad, OK, yeah, that's fine. I said, OK. And I was quite brave when I first met him, and I don't know why. And I was sort of saying, well, OK, well, I've got to give Aston Villa an answer, and you an answer, so we're going to do that tomorrow, on Wednesday. And he said, no, you're not. I said, well, yeah, because I've got Aston Villa's offer to think about and I've got your offer to think about. And he said, well, what one's the best one? I said, well, your offer's the best. I said, but it's not about money, is it? I said, it's about where I'm comfortable. I'm 22. Mm-hmm. It's a big step for me coming. I've never played in the top division. I said, I obviously know your reputation and stuff like that, and yeah, obviously you're well regarded in the game and everything. But he said, well, he said, you and your dad go and walk around the pitch, then come back in and let me know if you're signing for me or not. The moment I walked in the City Ground, and Carol, is bless her, his secretary at the time, come in, sit down, me and my dad, do you want a coffee, do you want a tea, and everything felt so different and so much more.
Yeah,
homely is the wrong word, but it's just felt really, everyone was sort of knew each other, do you know what I mean?
Yes. Even from a friendly feel to it.
Yeah, even from the people that, whatever they did at the ground,
yeah,
seemed to have that community sort of community spirit, I suppose, in a way.
Yeah.
So me and my dad walked around the pitch. He said, what do you think? And I said, I'm going to sign here. I said, I've just got a feeling. I said, I've just got a feeling here it's going to be better than Villa. And he said, yeah, I agree. So we went back in and I said, yeah, OK, we're signed. I said, I'll definitely sign. Yeah. I want to play for you, obviously, because of who you are, and I think you'll help me in my game. OK, he said. He said, well, are you going to tell Villa? I said, yeah, we'll ring them tomorrow. He said, no, you won't. You ring them now. I said, no, I won't. He told Aston Villa. He asked for Graham Turner. He said, it's Brian Clough. And he gave me the phone. And I said, oh. And I said, I looked at my dad, and they gave Dad the phone. My dad just picked it. He said, yeah, hello, Mr. Turner. Yeah, sorry, we're with Mr. Clough, and Neil's decided to sign for Forest. And that was it, end of conversation. He said, right, that's OK, that's done. He said, we sort all that details out. We go to Antonio's, which was an Italian restaurant on the bridge, which everyone in them days knew about.
Yeah.
Never been there before. Went in there, had a few glasses of wine, had a meal, went back, and he just pushed a bit of paper in front of me like that.
Yeah.
With nothing on it. He said, sign that, and I'll fill it in and come back tomorrow morning and it'll all be done. And I've looked at my dad, and he's looked at me, and I've looked at Mr. Clough, and I've gone, seriously, you want me to sign a blank contract? And once I sign that, I'm yours, regardless of what's on it. He said, well, do you trust me?
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'm going to have to. And I said, I will sign it, and I will trust you. So I signed it, gave him the paper back. Me and my dad went back to another hotel, and I said, right, we better have a drink, because I'm worried now. I want to play for him, I want to sign for him, I want to play for Forest, but I'm a bit worried.
Yeah.
Then I got back in and went back in the morning. He said, you okay? I said, yeah. He said, here's your contract. I looked at it, everything was in place that we'd agreed, everything was signed. I said, thank you very much. I said, now I've got to start house hunting.
Yeah.
And I was getting married as well before I came to Nottingham. And he said, that's fine. He said, come up 2 weeks before pre-season, two weekends, I'll arrange for you to go to see some houses. And I said, oh, I just want a new build. I know you're building some new houses around Nottingham. I want a new build on an estate. And we come up 2 weeks later. We found it on just behind the Nottingham Night Pub, which is still there. It was a Bovis house, and
that was it.
Put the deposit, sold my house in Portsmouth, put the deposit on that one, come up for pre-season, and then stayed.
That was it.
Yeah. And that was me.
Yeah.
Settled.
Well, it was obviously the right decision at the time, because I've got some old cuttings here. Clough snaps up Webb, and it says the persuasive powers of Forest boss Brian Clough won the day. And there were some pre-season friendlies you took part in after signing. One was at Portsmouth. I don't know if you remember that. You actually scored against your old club on the south coast. I think there was Weymouth and Portsmouth.
Weymouth, Portsmouth and Brighton, I think.
Yes, Brighton as well.
I think it was Brighton as well.
Yeah.
And I remember having that pre-season.
Yeah, and the headline there, Clough and Webb set up easy victory against Portsmouth. And then, of course, comes your league debut. And the headline is New Boy Neil's on the target, because you score on your debut.
I did, yeah. It was a bit fluky, I think, more than anything. I don't think it was a great strike, but it went in the back of the net. And it was at Luton.
That's right. Yeah.
And it was on their artificial pitch. But on the Friday before my debut, we travelled down to Luton to practice on the pitch, or to have a walk on the pitch and just have a little kickabout on the pitch. And it was weird. Yeah. It was very strange. And then, obviously, the game come up and we won it. Yeah. Oh, we drew.
It was a draw.
We drew
it was.
All,
it was
yeah.
a Robertson. John Robertson was back in the side, having come back from Derby, and reading the report, he actually, it's a free kick, and he taps it to you, to then score. Do you remember that?
I remember someone tapping it to me. I didn't know it was Robbo. Yeah, when Robbo came back, for me, like, I mean, I'd seen. On TV, like you do Match of the Day or the big match, mostly the big match, because when I was younger, that was what I was brought up on, big match on a Sunday afternoon rather than Saturday night Match of the Day.
Yeah.
So I always remember when I played with Robbo, and I pinged out a ball to him once. I can't remember how long it was into my career, but I pinged out, it was about 5 yards in front of him, and he stopped and he just looked at me, and I just went, "What? I put it in front of you?" And he just went, "Feet, son. Don't go to my feet, I don't go for it." But he does. When he went to his feet, he'd run all over the place. And I thought, that stuck in my head. So every time I went to his feet. But it was a good start.
Yes. And it must have been good playing alongside not only Robbo, Ian Bowyer as well, Gary Birtles, big European Cup names.
Bomber was a great help to me. I mean, like I say, I was naive. I hadn't played centre midfield at all in my career. I'd played as a right side of a three in midfield for Reading and a centre forward for Reading. I played as a wide right, wide left in a four midfield for Portsmouth, and again a centre forward for Portsmouth. But I really wanted to play in centre midfield. The reason I wanted to play in centre midfield, because you seem to get a lot of the ball. Because when I was playing out wide, right and left, the ball always seemed to go in the middle before it come out to you. And I thought, no, I want to be centre midfield. I want to be able to do that rather than be stuck out wide. So I did ask Mr. Clough where are you going to play me, because I want to play centre midfield. Typical answer, you'll play where you're well told.
Yeah.
And the first game, the first game I played, I was centre midfield with Bomber. And Bomber was a great help to me.
Before that Luton game, I found a cutting where the headline is, "We're all set." And Cluffy really does praise you. It says he can play a ball and hold it. He said a friendly against Barnsley had proven to me how much talent Neil Webb possesses. He's absolutely teeming with it. I'm just trying to teach him how to tackle like Archie Gemmell now.
Tackling was not my forte. Tackling I hated.
Yeah.
If I had a chance of winning it, then I thought, great. But if it was a 50-50 or anything beyond, then it was not my forte. I was not the strongest player. And he always had a go at me for tackling.
Was it something that he wanted to add to your game? Getting the ball?
Yeah, I think to be more aggressive. But I don't think I ever became an aggressive tackler at all.
No.
I tried to win the ball cleverly, if you can do that. But tackling was not high on my list. My list was getting the ball, create for other people, and hopefully put in with a few goals every year.
Yeah. Now, you'll like this newspaper article. The headline is, "It's tough under Clough," says Webb. And it says, "Life under Brian Clough is everything Neil Webb expected. It's totally unpredictable." And this was after you'd volunteered to go in goal in a match against West Ham. And Forest were 2-0 down.
Yeah.
The goalkeeper, Hans Segers, was injured.
Yeah.
And I think he was looking for volunteers. And what happened?
Well, I don't think he was looking for volunteers. I think it happened very early in the game. I think after about 25, 30 minutes or something, Hans' knee went. And in them days, one sub. Yeah. And I believe, if my memory serves me right, the sub was Colin Walsh.
Yes.
So Johnny, I can't remember, someone come up to me and said, I'll go in goal.
Yeah, Johnny Metgod said he offered to go in goal.
I thought it was Johnny. Johnny said, "I'll go in goal." And I went, "No," I said, no. I said, you are too important on the park. I said, "I'll go in goal." Because I always used to fancy myself as a goalkeeper as a kid.
Ah.
I had my Peter Benetti little gloves, them useless little green things that got soaking wet in the wet. And when we used to go over the park as a kid, every Sunday afternoon after the big match, I'd go in goal more often than not.
Right.
My dad taught me out of that. I said, goalkeepers are mad. and you've got to be mad to be a goalkeeper, as they say. Yeah. And he sort of convinced me not to progress that. So I thought, no, I'll go in goal. So I went in goal at West Ham, obviously 2-0 down. So we walk in at half time. I've got Hans's gloves on that are massive. Yeah. These gloves, they weren't like the old Pete Benetti things I thought. They were these big things, and they were massive. Yeah. And I sat down with these gloves on, the goalkeeper shirt. And the gaffer just turned around and went, well, we've got no chance now. We've got, we're losing, and we've got someone who can't play in midfield now in goal. And I think it was 4-2 at the end. I think I let in two. Mm. I enjoyed it, but the next game, I believe, was, if my memory is, Ipswich at home.
Yes.
And he dropped me. I wasn't even sub. He dropped me. The day Friday, the team sheet goes up. The 12 players who are involved,
yep,
pins up at lunchtime. Job done. No arguments, no going in, unless you're brave enough to go and storm in. And I just looked at it, and a few of the more experienced players said, I said, what have I done wrong? Mm. And they said, he probably thought you wanted to get out of the way because we were getting beat. Uh-huh. And he thinks I've used that as an excuse to get out of the, whatever. Anyway, so I sat in the exec box in one of the glass rooms. They beat Ipswich 5-0 at home. I think it was about 5-0. And I was like, this is going to be interesting. But he put me in the next game. But yeah. I would never... But that taught me one invaluable lesson under the gaffer was never volunteer for anything. And I didn't. Yeah.
As you say, he did put you back in the side. And there were more goals before the end of the year. A headline here, front of the football post. Nice 1-0. You scored against Liverpool in a 1-1 draw. Mm. And your first home goal... the first goal at home at the City Ground. Webb weaves a magic spell, it says, and it was a 2-1 win against West Brom. You were often in the headlines, on the sports pages, doing well. Did that distract you at all, or didn't you pay much attention to the media at the time?
No, it didn't bother me. I mean, obviously, you'd like to see your name in a nice headline, and it was good. I didn't become big-headed or arrogant about it. I just thought, oh, yeah, I've had a good game. So I used to mark myself after most games anyway. I just go home and try to analyse it if I could. Forrest started to do a little video of games from the gantry at the top doing their own video. The quality was absolutely atrocious. But I used to get one every Monday from a home game and go home and I'd watch it. And sometimes I'd sit and think, oh, that was bad. Oh, that was bad. And I always look at my bad points rather than my good points. And all my three boys have told me that I always pick up when they were younger, I always picked on their bad points rather than their good points. And I said, but you haven't got to improve. Your good points are good, so you will keep doing them. It's your bad points I've got to pinpoint so you know what you've done wrong. But they didn't like it when they were younger, obviously. I loved having a nice headline. It was great.
And I've got a Shoot magazine here from 1986, the team photo of Forrest. Mm. You're on the middle row there, next to Cluffy himself. When you look at that and some of the faces, we've got Des Walker and Stuart Pearce and Nigel Clough on the end there as well. Mm. What sort of goes through your mind when you see those well-known faces?
I just thought we had a good team coming together. When I joined in 85, it was split, I think. It was the old crew and the young ones coming through, i.e. Des, Chris Fairclough, myself. And then obviously Piercy signed. Nigel was coming through. And it was just the start of a sort of rebuilding for Forest to a degree, but a younger rebuild than what the gaffer was normally renowned for, I think, because he normally went for more experienced and players that that didn't need moulding, I suppose. But that all changed in 87, 88, when we all sort of... It just really clicked. Yes. It really clicked. And, you know, looking at the team, the young players that we had a good defence, we had a good midfield, and we had people that could score goals up front.
What do you think it was that made Cluffy such a special manager? Because he often says, I concentrated on what players could do rather than what they couldn't do. Obviously, he wanted you to improve certain aspects of your game. What do you think set him apart from the rest?
Simplicity. I've always told people that, you know, after I finished, that what did he do? I said, he didn't do anything. I said, he didn't coach. He didn't do set pieces. He gave you the responsibility as an individual and as a team and as a collective team. So if we got a corner, whoever fancied it, basically, could go and take it. I mean, Nigel used to go out and take some. You know, he was a centre forward, and you think, what's he doing taking the... Most people think, what's the centre forward doing taking a corner? But we used to think, whoever fancied it at the time, doing whatever, free kicks, when it was Piercy and Johnny Metcalf, guys, they used to argue all the time about who was having it. I used to fancy myself as a bit, I think I'd have a go at a free kick, but I used to walk into conversations, I've got no chance.
Leave it, yeah.
It's them two, they can always practically hit the target, most of the time go in, so... Yeah, it was all off the cuff. It really was. Training was not difficult. It was simple. There was nothing to complicate it.
No.
And I think that's what made him such a genius in the young player. Because if you when you got a young team like we were progressing, if you overcomplicated it, I think we'd have didn't know what to do.
There is an article here that says Clough Blast boosts Webb, and it sort of says that you actually appreciated a boot up the backside occasionally, and Cluffy was able to do that. Did that help your game then, rather than sort of knock you down?
Yeah, because he didn't do it very often. And when you got one, a downward you sat back and thought, OK, I don't normally get them, so it's a once every so often. It's not every week, it's not every day, it's not... every game, it was a one-off that he gave me a real blast, and it got me to sit down, think about it, and think, oh, okay, yeah, you're right, and go on, rather than keep on and on and on, and then it just drags you down. Yeah. Whereas this was a boost, and it was like, probably I was sitting on my laurels a little bit. I don't know. I might have been got too comfortable with what I was doing, and although I was still performing, but some things he was just like, he wasn't happy with, but it would be once every blue moon. It wouldn't be all the time.
Did he give praise to your face? Would he give you a boost if you needed it?
Very rare. Very rare. Very rare too. He probably in the team said, like, you're doing well. And I mean, I've seen Hodgie say something once when we were at Norwich, and we were sitting down at half time, and Hodgie says, oh, the gaffer called him out at half time and said, look, Harry, you're a good midfield player, but Neil's better, give him the ball, you know. Just little things like that, you know. Yeah. And if you shot from 25, 30 yards and it went absolutely nowhere near the goal, the goalkeeper didn't save it or didn't go in, he'd want to know why you shot. You couldn't explain it to him why you shot, because he's got two centre-forwards in front of you and they're probably in a better position. So you should be passing to them. They're the ones that score the goals. You score a goal every so often. They're the ones that are supposed to score every week.
Yeah.
So you should not be shooting from there. You should be trying to pass to them.
Yeah. But you did score in the League Cup final, which was against Luton, I think.
Yeah.
And that was a special game, because I've got a cutting from the Football Post here. This one's for Luke. Mm. And there's a picture of you with your little son, Luke. And you're saying that... You're hoping that it creates some nice memories for him on video in the future. Mm. And, of course, it did too. And it says your granddad was going to be at the match as well, because he wanted to see you in a Wembley final. That must have been special, scoring in a cup final.
It was, because first half we didn't perform. We were so off it for some reason. I don't know why. We were 1-0 down at half-time, and it was weird. And we went in at half-time, sat down, and the gaffer just literally sat there. Didn't really say much. We knew we hadn't performed. We knew we were letting people ourselves down, let alone all the supporters that had travelled down. And I can't even remember what he said, but he must have said something that was short and sweet. And second half, we were energised and just transformed in the second half. I mean, I scored a good goal. Great pass from Tommy Gaynor. Mm. Great pass that set it up. And then, when we won... I always remember that, like, people told me, oh, did you see where the gaff went afterwards? I said, no, what happened? He said, oh, he ran away before we picked the trophy up and just give the thumbs up to the supporters and disappeared down the tunnel. So after the game, we all obviously piled in a few glasses of champagne and stuff like that. And I whizzed in the shower and got changed and got out. And he just looked at me, where are you going? I said, I'm going to see my parents outside and my granddad's here. He said, your granddad? I said, yeah, my dad's dad's here, my mum and my dad. And they're waiting outside in Wembley Tunnel. There was a big door. Mm. And outside that's where family had to meet if you wanted to see him. So I said, I'm going out there to see him. And he said, hold on a minute. So he's gone outside, saw the doorman, got my dad and my granddad into the dressing room. My mum obviously couldn't come in, so she had to stand out. And he apologised. He said, sorry, Mrs. Webb, but you can't come in. Yeah. And he took, and I've got a picture of me and my dad and the gaffer with the cup. And my dad absolutely loved it. He's framed. He's still... he's passed away now, bless him. Mm. But it's, my mum still got it up in the living room, you know, of that picture. And that was a great memory for him to do that, because he knew I just wanted to get out. And my first success ever, my first major success in English football. Yeah. I won the third division title for Portsmouth, which was a great honour at the time. But to win a major competition, because it was a major competition back in the day. I mean, exactly. To win that, to be your first trophy, it just meant so much to me. And I just needed to be with my family.
Yeah, that was your first major success. And then, of course, the England caps as well. Mm. And Cloughy was championing your case with Bobby Robson, which must have been good. You then went to Man U. Mm. You decided to move. Is it right that Cloughy tried to get you back straight away?
It is true. I think my contract was up the year before. Before the Euros in 98, in 88, I mean. Mm. And I said to the gaffer, I said, I'll sign a year to get through to the Euros. And then I had a dream of playing abroad at the time, especially Italy. But there was only two foreign players allowed in each league in the world at that time. And I thought, well, if I have a good Euros, I might have a chance of moving to Italy, which was a dream that I wanted to pursue because I used to watch Italian football every Sunday. And it was a dream that I thought, if it materialised, I want that option at the after the Euros in 88, if I had another good season with Forest during that period. Unfortunately, we did. So I signed another year, and it come to the end of that contract. And, the gaffer was talking to me and sort of saying, what do you want? I said, I don't know. I don't know what I want to do. I don't know whether I want to stay or whether I should... I didn't even think about Man United or anyone in England. I was just more concerned about going abroad. Anyway, I was walking the dogs down the Trent by the training ground, and I had a phone call on my brick of a mobile phone back in the day, and it was Alex Ferguson. And I said, oh, all right, okay. He said, I really want you to come to Man United. I said, well, you know, I'm happy at Nottingham. I've got a great life here. I said, I'm really pleased with the way it's going. He said, well, I need to talk to you and stuff like that. I said, well, I'm out of contract, so I can talk to anybody. And then it dragged on and on and on and on. And in the end, I was still in two minds because I'd never met Alex Ferguson personally. You look at it, you think, well, you know, the attendance figures at that time was, we were averaging at Forest 18,000. May United were averaging 55. We had a better team at Forest than what Man United had at that time. And I was so torn. I sat at home and just unplugged the phones, didn't even switch on my mobile or anything. I just sat there. I thought, I don't know what... I didn't really know what to do.
No.
Didn't really know what to do. Then Rangers called me, Graham Souness, and gave it the old Godfather speak. I'll make you an offer you can't refuse. And I said, I don't want to go to Scotland. Oh. I said, I'm sorry. I said, but I just don't want to go to Scotland. I said, I've got a choice. Man United, Forest... And it doesn't look like I'm going to have a choice about going abroad, so it's a straight choice now. And I was still and in the end, I got persuaded by a few people that I should join Man United because they were going to be on the cusp of challenging again for the league after all so many years of not getting there. And I was turned by that. And it went to a tribunal, which was at Villa Park, funnily enough. So I drove down with Alex Ferguson and the club secretary from Manchester, because I'd signed for Manchester. And Cloughy turned up, and I was shocked. I was shocked that the gaff was there, and I panicked. And I walked in, and he was standing there, and I thought, what is he doing here?
Yeah.
He doesn't turn up. He does not turn up to things like this. So we've gone into the thing where you all go in together, then I go out, and then the two clubs sit there and get whatever grilling they get, then the two clubs go out, and then I go in on my own and get a grilling. Oh, have they promised you anything that's not down here and all that? And I'm like, well, no, and whatever, and blah blah blah. Yeah. Walk back in again, it come out right. It's 1.5 million, and I thought, doesn't affect me. I'm not whatever. And Fergie was seething. He was mad because they wanted to pay about a million, I remember standing outside thinking, what the hell's going on here? I thought, and then I could see the gaffer walking.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, what's he going to say? I thought, oh, I'm panic. And he just turned around to Fergie and said, I'll give you 1.74 in now. And I've looked at the gaffer and I've gone, what? And he just turned around and said, I'll give you 1.7 million to have him back now. And the way Fergie had reacted, I thought, he's going to do it. And I thought, I don't mind. I really didn't mind.
No.
And so he said, I don't know what he said. And he stormed off and we drove back to Manchester in complete silence. And that was it. Mm. Yeah, he didn't accept it. But probably wishes he did now.
Yeah. It didn't go tremendously well at Man U. Cause I know you got injured early doors, but you came back to Forest hoping to sort of help them out of a very sticky situation, and that didn't work out quite either. But looking back, how will you remember Cluffy?
Oh, nothing bad about him whatsoever. Everything's good. I praise him to whatever people talked about him. I moved back to Reading in 1996 when I left Nottingham for good, and to make sure they were young at 11 and 8 at the time, my two boys, and to get them settled around family and schools and stuff like that. And I didn't realise how many Forest fans were in Reading. I go to the pub on a Sunday afternoon and that, and I support Forest. I've been supporting them since the European days. Do you? Because I left Reading when I was 19 and didn't move back till I was 33. So, and I said, suddenly all these people go, hey, I'm a Forest fan. So it was... I would never... There's nothing bad I could ever say about the gaffer whatsoever. He was fantastic to me. Should I have left? Would it have been different? Probably, but who knows?
No.
Who knows? I mean, I'd love to have a crystal ball and not make the move and stay at Forest and see what would have happened, but you can't do that.
Well, on behalf of all the fans, thanks ever so much for those fantastic memories in the 80s. We really enjoyed watching you. And thanks for sharing your stories today for The Green Jumper. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you, Neil Webb.
Thank you very much, Marcus. Thank you.
And thanks to you for listening. If you're enjoying the podcast, please support it by visiting the tribute website, brianclough.com, and buying a souvenir. There are badges, keyrings, coasters, and greetings cards. They all help to fund the production and publication costs of the podcast. You'll also find my Cluffy books, which I can sign personally for you as well. You'll find them all at the non-profit tribute website, brianclough.com. Thanks for your company, and I hope you can join me again next time for more memories of the great man in the green jumper.